Hey everybody, this is the Drive On Podcast, where we talk about issues affecting veterans after they get out of the military. I'm your host, Scott DeLuzio, and now let's get on with the show. Thanks for joining us on the Drive On Podcast. Today we have friend Chris Weir, who actually we met through my wife, who was on the show last week, and she was Chris's real estate agent when he moved out to Arizona. And Chris served in the military, and Chris and I both share a similar story to some extent. Both of us lost our brothers in combat, and I brought Chris on the show because I kind of wanted to hear his side of everything, because at the time, unlike me, he was not serving in the military, and I wanted to see how his brothers, what happened with his brother has affected his military career and other things throughout his life. So Chris, welcome to the show. And
thanks for having me, Scott. Appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Excited to be here.
So tell us a little bit about yourself, where you're from and all that kind of stuff.
So I'm originally from a small little town called Chattanooga, Tennessee, in southeast Tennessee on the Georgia border. Born and raised there. And when I grew up, right, and graduated high school, went on to college in Nashville, and then been around a few different places, lived in Ohio for a little bit, but now we are here out in Arizona. I'm married, have two daughters, therefore I'm bald. They are both teenagers, so my oldest is 16, my youngest is 14, and I have no hair to prove it, so So yeah, that's basically me in a nutshell.
Sure. Yeah. So let's jump right in. Let's start talking about, when you joined the military and kind of the circumstances surrounding that, sure. and everything that happened kind of with your brother, how that happened, and then what influenced your decision to ultimately sure. join the military.
Yeah. September of 2006 was when my brother was killed in Baghdad, and so I had always wanted to join the military. It was something that I always wanted to do. Pretty much my father, his father, his father's father, 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 all down the line. Everybody had served. And then, of course, my brother as well. So I was always struggling with the idea of when I got older, sitting on the front porch with my grandkids, not being able to tell them, a story about being in the military and serving my country. So it was something that had been on my mind for many years. I was getting older at that time, at least older, not compared to today, but at that time I was getting older for joining the military anyway. And I was knocking on 30's door. And so September came around, David was killed in Iraq. That whole event, as you know, is just it's a crazy situation. It's just so very different than losing a family member, to health issues or even a car crash or something. Not to say that it's any easier necessarily, because it's certainly not in any right. circumstance to lose anyone. But I mean, just little things like how long it took for them to get his body back to the States, right? Because it has to go through Dover and the whole nine. And so we were sitting around the town, and our town happened to be, and still is today, an incredibly patriotic town. Very, very patriotic. So during that whole time we had, and at that same time, to add to the whole the situation, was that silly little group out of Kansas had threatened to come protest mm-hmm. my brother's funeral. So we had, security posted at our house. I mean, we had police escorts everywhere we went. Obviously, the community, members of the community constantly dropping by. Mm-hmm. Members of the press and the media were always around. And I got promoted to family spokesperson. So
I was actually kind of wondering about that, because that was very similar to what happened to us as yeah. well. I came home from Afghanistan and landed at the airport. There was a state police officer there with my family who said, we're going to take you around kind of like the back way out so that you can avoid all the news vans that are waiting for you at the airport.
Right.
How they knew I was coming
that
day and at that time was like, I had no idea. But when we got ended up getting to my parents' house, there were news vans lining up the street and everything like that. So anyway,
it's a weird thing to deal with. I mean, literally one day you're just a Joe Blow going about your day.
Yeah.
And then the next day, literally the next day, it's news interview after news interview, hundreds of community members coming by, people you don't even know. I mean, people I've never even met, all the politicians on the local, state, and even the federal level coming in to visit and pay their condolences. And all that's awesome. I mean, that was so appreciated. I mean, it was like, wow. I mean, all of you were moved this much by the sacrifice my brother made. I mean, that's really incredible. We were talking the other day and I shared with you, it's kind of this weird place where you're stuck between devastation and pride. It's you're just completely devastated that you just lost, you know, or that I had just lost my brother, who was, you know, my best friend. That was my brother. We were the closest in age. And I mean, I literally talked to him before he went out on the mission. We talked over the phone before he went out on that last mission. And so, I mean, we were very, very close. And so devastated by losing him, but at the same time, so dang proud of what he did.
Yeah.
And so freaking proud of how the community stood up. And, you know, I mean, even these protesters, they flew into Chattanooga and none of the taxi companies would give them a ride. So they couldn't even leave they couldn't get away from the airport.
Nice. Okay.
They got stuck. I mean, is that not the most incredible thing?
That's
great. Yeah. That is absolutely awesome. So I think that whole deal, a month, 2 months, maybe 3 months after that, it really started sinking in for me that it's now or another. It wasn't his death that motivated me to join, because again, I'd always wanted to, but it was kind of that kick in the butt I needed to finally get up and go do it.
Yep.
Absolutely. I went in, he was killed in September. I went in, I believe it was December. I went into the recruiter and, said, you know, I want to join up and do the deal. And of course the recruiters knew who I was, you know, and they wouldn't let me join. So they said, no, it's too soon. You have to wait. So I had to wait until the next summer. They literally just wouldn't let me join. Have you ever heard a recruiter turn someone away? You
know, so there's a first.
I know, it's like an amazing thing. Now that I've been through the military, it's like, holy crap, I don't think that ever is done.
No.
Usually it's just, can you fog the mirror? But but anyway, so yeah, I had to wait until the summer, and then finally the next summer, I shipped off to basic, and it was tough. I mean, it was tough on my family. It wasn't really, I mean, I knew, because obviously we think we're in control of ourselves, at least. So I didn't have the fears necessarily, but I mean, obviously my mother, my wife, my daughters were very young at that time. So it wasn't really sinking in with them. They didn't really grasp everything that was going on, but definitely the rest of my family did. Mm-hmm. Some of them weren't happy with me, you know, I had joined. They were all supportive, obviously, but certainly not happy that I made that decision. So yeah, it was, I think it was July is when I shipped off to, Fort Lost in the Woods, Misery, AKA Fort Leonard Wood, Missouri. Yep. but yeah, I did my basic training in the middle of summer up in Missouri and went down to San Antonio for a little bit for, combat medic training, and then on to Fort Lee, Virginia, and then eventually got stationed at Fort Campbell in Kentucky, 101st.
All right. So you were active duty, you know, same way that your brother was.
Yeah.
Okay.
Same. In fact, David, I don't even know if I've mentioned his name yet. No, David it was my brother's name, but, he was actually stationed exactly where I was. So I wasn't able to get into his unit because I came in as a supply sergeant. They already had one. So I didn't get his unit, but, he was there at Fort Campbell. That's where he was stationed. So I got to hang around all the guys that he was with. There was good in that. There was some bad, you know, bringing up memories, bringing up stuff that I didn't want to think about necessarily.
Sure.
But it was nice to be around those guys. They all looked out for me, and it's kind of, they were all younger than me. It was funny, but they were all looking out for me. So, you know, or at least they thought they were. So I let them think that.
So when we talked the other day, and you mentioned that your family and yourself had a goal of like basically not letting his memory kind of sure. die. And hopefully, you know, with this helps a little bit, you know, with sure. this podcast episode, sure. You know, but what were some of the things that your family and you have done to keep his memory alive? Were there, there stories that were told? Were there, you know, organizations that were, you know, serviced or, you know, whatever? Yeah. What were some of those things that you guys did?
Yeah. So very early on, we made the decision that, that we did not want to shy away from sharing his story. You know, there's a lot of families that make the decision, and I totally understand that decision, to be perfectly honest with, but some make the decision they don't want to talk to the media. They're just, it's a private affair and they're going to deal with it with their own family and, sure. and internal, and that's it. And I totally get that. We made the decision though that I think in part probably because of how we were raised, and the community that we lived in our whole life, just being so patriotic, that it was just kind of how we did things. I guess is the best way to say it. So we made the decision that we were going to share his story, when given an opportunity, and make sure that, that people could be maybe inspired by his sacrifice. So, you know, obviously we were open to any media interviews, and my goodness, are they open to giving them? Geez, it was, we didn't turn down any media requests. So we did interviews on radio, on TV, national, Fox News and CNN. We did, one of their broadcasts. So we did quite a bit of media, but then also little things. I mean, and some things that are just in the community, right? Like, the school that we went to, there's four of us boys. And we all went to the same elementary school. We terrorized all the same teachers, and they remember every one of us. And, but they, you know, they named the drive there right in front of the road, right in front of the school, Sergeant David Weir Boulevard, I think it was. Okay. And, there's a, David T. Weir Day, and there's an annual, he played football in high school, and at the high school they retired his number, and they do an annual, now there's an annual, award that one of the football players wins at the end of the year. And it's one of the big awards, that they give away every single year. So that's all over the place. The veterans organizations have things that they do every, Memorial Day. There's, a ceremony that's done where they recognize David. And so there's just so many things in the community, so many little things. And we just decided to let it happen and let people, you know, show their love and appreciation for what he did, mm-hmm. and hopefully let that be an example. You know, let the community be an example, to the rest of the country. You know, we lived up in Ohio. I shared with you for a little bit, up in Ohio, and nothing like that happened. You know, again, not that anybody in Ohio is bad, because they're not, but they certainly didn't go out of their way when they lost service members. Certainly not like, you know, Tennessee sure. did. So we really wanted that to be something that happened. So that's, and to this day, those things continue to go on. They still have events and celebrations honoring my brother. I'm constantly getting asked to fly back to Tennessee for this little organization who's doing this little event to come and be the keynote, or to pass the award out, or whatever it is, you know, hand the right. award out. And, I think that's awesome. I love it. And it keeps him alive, you know, for me anyway.
Yeah, that's great. And it shows how, you know, what your intention was in terms of not letting his memory die and letting that live on. Shows how, you know, it really hasn't died, you know, all these years later, you know, he's still in the memory of the people, especially in your community there.
Well, you know, what's amazing, Scott, is just this past year, there were the group of kids in elementary school at that time. Right. And so I always remember those kids. And we always talked about this, is how whenever we would make presentations. Because even when I got into the military, I was constantly coming back, again, for all these events every single year. And I was able to involve my commander, and my first sergeant got involved. And we had, you know, I brought, you know, challenge coins, and we brought some flags back from Iraq, and, you know, all that kind of good stuff to pass out. And I always remember talking to everybody about the young boys' eyes that were in fifth, sixth grade at that time, and how they were so glued to what was happening in front of them, mm-hmm. you know, and especially when they would show pictures of David, you know, and I mean, he looked the part, man. I mean, he was a military guy, right? I looked like a goober. He looked the part. He was absolutely the soldier's soldier, and he was certainly going to make a career out of it. But, you know, you could see their eyes. And then just this past year, I remember some of those kids, and I'm watching them ship off to basic, wow. joining all the different branches. You know, there was one of our little cousins went into the, he's not little anymore, he's bigger than I am, but went into the Air Force, you know, and you know, others that are joining the Army, and one went into the Marines, and even the friends that David had, that some of them were, you know, just young kids, right? And mm-hmm. they do what young kids do, which is basically nothing. And so they weren't going to college, they weren't doing anything, and these guys stepped up and they all joined, and you know, you kind of hit the nail on the head a second ago. It's just letting he keeps living on mm-hmm. in so many different ways, not just the events and awards and all this, but in the lives of the people that he touched that are now going out and laying their life on the line for this country. And quite frankly, that's what it's about, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I kind of wonder, you know, from your perspective, if you ever think about, like, how many of those kids are, well, not kids anymore, obviously.
Right.
How many of them joined because, you know, they saw you walking in uniform, like, wow, I want to do that when I grow up, or you know, or the stories that they've heard about your brother or other things like that. Like,
you know, we joked about this amongst ourselves because it was actually kind of funny. But that year that my brother died, on Halloween, you could not have found an Army uniform in any of the Halloween stores. All the kids wanted to be soldiers in that town.
That's great.
I mean, we're talking about a town of 100,000 people. I mean, it's not the, you know, it's not a huge town by any stretch of the imagination. It's still a small town, but not tiny. I mean, that's a pretty good sized community, you know. And, you know, the day of his funeral, there were no flags anywhere. All the stores sold out of flags. The streets were lined for 30 something miles.
Wow.
I mean, literally 30 miles. The route from the funeral home to the National Cemetery there in Chattanooga was a 30-mile drive. When we arrived in Chattanooga, the last cars were getting off the exit or getting onto the interstate back in Cleveland.
Oh, wow.
I mean, it was unbelievable. The Patriot Guard riders were there. Yeah. The whole night, it was just an amazing event that I think everybody took something from. I it went so beyond our family. It was so much bigger than David. It was bigger than any of us. Mm-hmm. And I truly believe he made a major, major impact on many, many, many lives, and still does to this day.
Yeah. It sounds like he definitely had that sort of impact on not just your family,
right,
and in the community, but the whole surrounding area.
Sure.
Where people kind of see how that one sacrifice kind of brings people together. Like you were talking about before with, you know, that group, you know, coming in to, you know, kind of protest his funeral and everything. Not even the taxi drivers would give him a ride.
Yeah.
Like, that's great. You know?
I know. Doesn't it make you smile?
Like, I was like, good.
It's like, you
good.
Can't even help it. It's like,
I don't want to see those people get any sort of help. Like,
exactly.
You know, don't even serve them at the restaurant, maybe, you know?
It's hilarious. You should have saw the place the police had roped off for him, too. It was actually quite funny.
That's funny.
It's kind of marshy, swampy little area. They would have had a lot of fun there. They didn't even make it.
But the good thing, like you said, the Patriot Guard riders were there.
They were there.
They would not have let them get too
close.
We
had never seen them. No. We'd have never seen them.
No, and that's the thing.
Those guys are awesome, by the way.
There were rumors that those same people might have, you know, come to my brother's funeral as well. and the Patriot Guard riders were there, and they were like, don't worry about it. You won't see them. So.
and they're not lying.
They're not lying. No, they were. They meant business.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
They'll be taken care of.
Absolutely.
Don't worry about
Absolutely. Never felt safer in my life.
Exactly. Yeah. Wow. So let's talk, if you will, a little bit about sort of the grieving process, if you will. Mm. You know, I know you talked a little bit about how you kind of decided, you know, yeah, this is time to, you know, join the military and everything, but everyone goes through a little bit of, everyone has a different grieving process. Right. Some people they lock themselves in a room mm-hmm. for, you know, days on end, and, you know, they cry themselves to sleep and all that stuff. Other people have different ways. And so let's talk a little bit about, like, kind of how that looked for you, and even kind of long term. You know, did you, you know, go to any sort of counseling or anything like that, or you know, like what type of you know, things are happen with you, you know, with all of that?
So I'm generally not the type of person who looks back and says I wish I would have done things differently, but probably it would have been a little healthier for me if I would have stopped and grieved. Mm-hmm. I allowed, as being the family spokesperson, I allowed myself to get wrapped up in the mission of keeping his memory alive.
Yeah.
And that literally was almost a full-time job. I mean, it's quite amazing, actually. And so I dove into that, you know, for the 30, 60 days there, after his death. I just kind of drowned myself in all of that. Coming out of that, jumped right into work, you know, and working on joining the military. Mm-hmm. So I knew that I was going in, you know, so you got to get ready for that, especially when you were in the type of shape that I was in. So had just kind of dove all my thoughts and all my energies and all my efforts into that. It wasn't until basic training, as a matter of fact, when we were out on the bayonet field and doing the bayonet training, and how, for whatever reason, for me, that was just an intense training.
Okay.
Everybody experiences all the trainings differently, but that one was the hardest training for me because, for whatever reason, it clicked with me there. I'm training to kill someone.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's literally what I'm being trained to do right now.
And with bayonet training, that's up close and personal.
It's
that's,
very up
that's
close.
That's not, I'm going to reach out and touch someone who's 300 yards away.
Exactly. Well, and it's so intense because you're sitting there, it's a dummy, of course, but you're literally sitting there with all the physical nature of, like, seriously attacking this dummy right in front of you.
Yeah.
And obviously, drill sergeants are yelling and screaming. It's like everybody's having a blast because it's the funnest thing they've ever done.
Yeah.
And all I could sit there and think about was, you know, my brother going through this.
Yeah.
You know, and how all of a sudden it was a very, very weird moment for me where it's kind of like it just clicked with me. Holy crap, my brother was killed in this.
Yeah.
You know, and now I'm doing this. Like, what the literal hell am I doing here? You know,
and this is real now. Yeah.
For the really and truly, I mean, I certainly shed plenty of tears during the whole ordeal, the funeral and all that kind of stuff. But I literally broke down and fell to my knees in basic training on the bayonet field. And Drill Sergeant Gatewood, I'll never forget him. Greatest man I've ever met in my life. And they knew because I had challenge coins.
Okay.
I had general's coins and I had all the, you know, like none of these guys have any of these coins and I'm coming in as a freaking E-Fuzzy, you know, and I've got my coins. And so at first they didn't like that until they learned it why I got them. But so he came over and, really and truly it was just talking that through. And it was very strange because what ended up happening, even though my brother died when I was not in the military, my grieving took place while I was in the military. And you know, because you went through it when you were in the military, how a service member grieves is very, very different than how a civilian is going to grieve, right? Even if it's a family member, because you got to think of it from a different perspective, right? You still have to accomplish missions. You still have to get your job done. And that job is what just killed your brother, right? I mean, so it's gosh, it's so weird. God, it is the most weirdest situation. Thinking back on it many years later now, but it was then that's when I started my grieving, and I think through basic training, I remember graduating basic training and drill sergeants coming up to me, you know, mm-hmm. and they're like, you know, this was for David, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it was like, dang, man. I mean, this is really, really cool. So my grieving wasn't, you know, I don't know. My process was just very different. You know, like I said, in the very beginning, I dove into just keeping his memory alive. But then during basic training, I was able to reflect a little bit. And
that's a weird time to be
It is a very weird time to be reflective. But it worked for me. It really worked well for me. I was able to really process it, put all of it into context. And I really, after that, I was good. Got to Iraq. My commander was, he was pretty awesome. And he found the report of my brother's death. He found it, and dug and got it and got the coordinates.
Oh, okay.
And asked me if I wanted to go where David had died.
Okay.
And of course we were down in Talil. So we were in Southern Iraq. David obviously died in Baghdad, more north than we were. But, so I thought about it for a little bit. I'm like, oh geez, do I really want to do that?
Yeah.
But then it kind of clicked with me. I'm going to be the only person in my entire family or community that will ever be able to see where David died. Cause none of my family's ever going to go to Iraq, or I hope they don't.
Sure.
Not really a good vacation spot, but that was kind of weird, right? I mean, that was like an untouchable, wasn't even thinking about that as a possibility to be able to actually go where he died.
Yeah.
And, but I decided to go, we took the trip up there, and that is, I think, where, I don't know, I don't want to call it closure, because it's not closed. I think about David all the time.
Yeah.
Again, we're constantly doing things, in his name, and there's scholarships, and there's all this different stuff that's out there. So he's always front of mind. So I don't think it was necessarily closure, but I think it was certainly the turning of the chapter that I needed, that it was like, okay, now I can move on.
Yeah.
That's what I, for whatever reason, for me personally, odd as that might sound, that did it for me. And that's where I was like,
well,
I'm moving forward now.
Yeah, that's amazing to have that opportunity presented to you, where many people would never have that opportunity. I got to imagine most Gold Star families have never had any opportunity that presented to them to be able to go back to that location. Now, thinking back at, you know, losing a loved one in some other way, you know, car accident or something like that, you might drive past the intersection or something.
Right.
And so you get that opportunity to be in that location.
Yeah.
In a way that might be hard, especially if you live in that area and you drive by it every day.
Yeah.
But that first time you go there and you could probably have a similar coming to peace with the situation moment.
Well, you know, and you can piece it together in your mind a little bit too. Yeah. And I think that's part of the process, is trying to get your head around what happened. You know, I lost, you know, when I was younger, my cousin, I lost him to a car wreck, and he was my best friend. He was actually on his way to pick me up. And it was being able to go to that spot where he had his wreck did offer a little bit of closure in that I understood what happened. And I mean, you're right. How many, I mean, I can't imagine there's very many at all Gold Star families who've ever had the opportunity to go back to where their loved one, you know, was killed. I mean, how do you even get that information as a civilian, right? I mean, because that's classified information. So you couldn't even get the coordinates to where it happened, you know, unless you had a you know, a buddy that was there or whatever. But so it was a very special and a very unique opportunity. It's one that it was very, very hard. I'm not going to lie. It was very difficult. But I can look back at it now, and I cherish that I was able to do that. Because that's really what I needed to move forward in my life.
And I bet now, had you not chosen not to go, now looking back at it, you might
I'd be so mad kick at yourself
and be like, "Oh, dude. Why not? Why didn't I just pull my head out of my butt do it?
You know? I would be in a constant state of kicking my butt.
Absolutely. That's good. I'm glad you had that opportunity to go and, you know, have that closure. Yeah. Not closure necessarily, but, you know, close that chapter anyways, like you mentioned. Anyways, yeah. So is there anything else that you wanted to share about your brother or about your service or anything like that might potentially maybe help some other people or, you know, help people kind of find their own closure in their own way, in their own situations or anything like that you want to share?
You know, I guess the one thing that I would go back to is as far as the family that's left behind, I think so many times we, and rightly so, we talk a lot about the service member, and their sacrifice and how, amazing of an individual to lay their life on the line for their country. I mean, how does it get any better? I mean, I'm not quite sure. Does it get any better than that?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, does it get any more patriotic? I'm not sure. But anyway, but what ends up happening, or at least what I found through our experience, is that obviously the military, in all of its faults, and it has plenty, caring about fellow service members who've passed, they don't drop the ball on. They do a pretty freaking good job.
Yeah.
They are very obviously trained and very respectful on the whole funeral process, and they have the
casualty assistance.
The casualty assistance officer or whatever it's called. They come in and they stay there, you know, as long as they need to stay there. And I'm still in contact with ours today because he was at Fort Campbell, obviously. Yep. So I hung out with him when I went there. And so even to this day, I still talk to that guy. But I certainly saw everybody come out immediately after it happened. And therefore, you know, a good 30, 60 days after, it was front of everybody's mind. And then life keeps happening for everybody.
Yeah.
And they go on about their business. And it was literally like a light bulb switched off, you know, like somebody flipped a switch. One day it's police escorts and security and community members stopping by. And the next day it's, oh God, now what?
Yeah.
Now what do we do? And so I think the one thing that I think about is especially with the wives and mothers and fathers and siblings that are left behind, I would speak to the civilians in this respect and say, it still hurts in month 6. Don't forget about them, right? Check in on them. Make sure they're doing okay too, because it still hurts.
Sure.
You know, it's not better. It just because the funeral's over, just because the pomp and circumstance and ceremonies and all the recognition and all the media and all that kind of stuff is gone, doesn't mean that it feels any better. As a matter of fact, quite frankly, once that stuff is gone, that's when it starts setting in a little bit.
Yeah.
And you start probably feeling, or at least for our experience, started feeling more of it because we actually had time to realize what was the full scope of what was happening.
Sure.
So I would say to the civilians, certainly don't forget them. You know, 60, 90 days later, go back and keep checking on them. If you truly were moved by the sacrifice of the service member, then be moved enough to keep going back and helping the family, you know, because the family gets forgotten in this a lot, I think, unfortunately. The Gold Star Family Program is, you know, it's cool. I mean, it's great. It's an honor to be a part of, obviously. It sucks to be a part of it, but it's an honor to be a part of it. Only sucks because, obviously, I don't have my brother.
The cost of admission
is fine. Exactly. Cost of admission sucks tremendously. But, yeah, I would say certainly don't forget the family members
Sure.
that were left behind. Just stay with those guys.
Yeah.
Keep your arm around them. They're going to need help even after all the news vans have driven away. I don't even know if they do vans anymore. News trucks or whatever trucks, they are. Yeah. After they've driven away, everybody still needs those hugs, you know? So I think that would be my big encouragement for those who lose someone. And then the broader, for the service members who do come back, right, and aren't lost, is, and I know that you have and probably will much more talk about this on your podcast, but the find help if you need it, man.
Yeah.
Absolutely. If you're struggling with anything at all, there's so many people who want to help.
Mm-hmm.
There's just so many people dying to help you out. Go. Dude, it's weak to not do it. It takes strength to go and do that.
Yeah.
So, you've been strong in everything else. You just got through with a, freaking deployment or whatever. Don't go off and do something stupid. There's plenty of people that want to talk to you. So for the service members, I would just throw out that encouragement.
Absolutely. Yeah, I would definitely echo that same thing. All of that, everything with the Gold Star families that you're talking about and all the way down to the, to the military who are coming back, absolutely. So let's kind of wrap it up with one last question here. Is there anything that you wish someone would have told you before you joined the military?
I was waiting on that question to come out. I knew that was coming. Of course, other than don't listen to the recruiter. it's all lies. It's all like, no, I'm just kidding.
There's so many recruiters who might be listening.
Oh, yeah, they're so pissed at me right now. They're so pissed at me right now. Look, I love the recruiters. no, seriously. It's not all lies. It's not all lies. They're just doing their job. So, something that I wish I would have, that somebody would have told me when I was going in. I guess probably I had always kind of, what is the word I'm looking for? If you've never been in the military, some, and I was one of those, kind of set service members on a pedestal. Like, they're not quite normal people.
Mm-hmm.
They're like superheroes, right? I mean, you kind of look at them in that perspective.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And they're so completely not.
Right.
Right? I mean, don't get me wrong. That's not a hit on those guys. It is, they are just like every other American. They just made the decision. What is it, 2% or whatever, less than 2%? They are of that small percentage that just made the decision that they would be willing to lay their life down for their country, for people they've never, ever met before. But they're just normal, everyday people like us. And so when I went in, I was so surprised by that. I was expecting to be amongst gladiators.
Sure.
I mean, seriously, I'm like, okay, where's the Iron Man? Where's the, I mean, it's like these guys are supposed to be and they're just great individuals that are just like I was, which I think the overriding message is you don't have to be some big superhero character to join the military. You just have to have a passion for serving your country.
Right.
And it's people of every single walk of life, every ethnicity, every sex, from every single corner of America, these guys and girls are coming in. And they are superheroes because of that little decision, but everybody could make that decision.
Sure. Absolutely.
So I wish somebody would have prepared me for that I was going in amongst just some great people.
Just some regular guys.
Regular Joes.
Just
and James,
made that decision.
That's it. It was kind of interesting. That was
cool.
Neat.
All right. Well, thank you, Chris, for sharing your story and everything. And I'm so happy that you were, willing to come on the show and talk about everything. And, hopefully this story kind of opened up some eyes and, And if at the very least it's another way of keeping your brother's memory alive. And,
yeah.
And for that, I'm happy to help.
And for that, I'm appreciative. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Drive On Podcast. If you want to check out more episodes or learn more about the show, you can visit our website, driveonpodcast.com, or on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Drive On Podcast.